just trying to minimize the mansplaining, that's all.
What's basic to our audience is not basic to you. Hot mic.
Are we over-explaining things?
Joel, you're giving me a headache.
I'm not listening to you. Sorry, I was already thinking about our next.
Don't worry. We'll start again.
Hi, I'm Maria Bruno, Head of U.S. Wealth Planning Research here at Vanguard.
And I'm Joel Dixon, Global Head of Advice Methodology at Vanguard. Welcome to our podcast series, The Planner and the Geek, in which we will discuss topics that are important to individual investors.
And we'll have some fun along the way.
Hey, Maria, can you believe they let us come back to do another one of these episodes?
I know. What were they thinking, Joel?
Oh, I know. Should be fun.
What are we going to talk about today?
Well, I think we should talk about our favorite topic. You and I talk about it all the time. No, not rotisserie chicken.
Oh, I was actually going to say your Bing Cherry Red Miata.
Oh, yeah. I like my Bing Cherry Red Miata.
Glad you do.
Yeah. No, I was thinking about our favorite retirement topic.
Oh, don't get me all excited.
Oh, well. Yeah, what's your favorite topic? And we'll see if it matches
up. We are talking IRAs today, Joel.
Oh, yes, we are.
All right, good. Good topic.
Yeah.
Well, we are in the middle of IRA season.
IRA season being?
January through
April.
April.
Yeah, but
April 15-ish, depending upon when the filing date is.
Because everyone kind of, that's when we see a lot of people make their contributions if they're contributing to an IRA, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately. When we say tax season, it's the tax filing season, but you have until April 15th of this year, 2018, to make a 2017 contribution. But we know the better path would be to make that 2017 contribution in January of 2017.
Or to have made the 2018 contribution already. Have you made your IRA
Correct.
Contribution, Maria?
Sure.
No, you haven't made your IRA contribution?
I'm getting there, Joel. I got to push that button as I...
So
that, I keep throwing away that sticky.
So
I eat crow on this one.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For people listening, Maria has actually authored research here at Vanguard about the what's called the procrastination penalty of IRA contributions. And the fact that we tend to do it at the last minute, in essence, maybe 15 months later than when we were first eligible to make that contribution and potentially get the gains from that over time. So,
well, let's be clear. We're talking about my 2018 contribution.
So it's only been,
I did do 2017. So
it's only been a couple
months.
Yeah,
I usually do it. Within the first quarter, I do it. So I'm a little bit bad.
But that procrastination penalty is real. Right?
Absolutely, it's real.
Yeah. So, you know, people have materially less savings over time if they're always making their contributions in April of the following year for the previous year.
Yeah, I know, Joel. But this, you know, this actually leads to a question that I get very frequently in terms of, well, I'm not sure whether, you know, I can contribute to a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA. And
okay.
The answer is
yeah,
yes, as long as you have earned income, you can make the contribution. There is some thoughtfulness to whether it's a traditional or a Roth IRA.
Okay, we just leapfrogged into what do you mean different?
Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Roth, so forth. So IRAs, individual retirement arrangements, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so in large part, they've become a very significant source of retirement savings since their introduction, basically about 40 years ago. Is that fair?
Correct, yes. I was actually just looking at some recent statistics from the Investment Company Institute, and they survey mutual fund assets. And about a third of U.S. households own IRAs. So there's probably about upwards to $9 trillion in IRA assets today.
That's quite a bit of money. I think you could save for retirement or, you know, meet your retirement goals with that, huh? $9 trillion be enough for you, Maria?
That would be enough for me.
Okay.
Just enough, yes. Now, I think, you know, the number is large, and that's in part due to rollovers. So oftentimes individuals, when they retire from their employer-sponsored plan via 401k, they often do a rollover into an individual retirement account.
Or even when they just change jobs, change
Correct,
employers.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't have to
yes.
be retirement, right? So yeah, so IRAs have really in many ways grown. Yeah, there are two ways to get IRA assets. You contribute to it on an annual basis, like we were just talking about, or you switch employers or retire and you take money out of what had been your employer's plan, defined contribution plan, often 401k plan, and roll it into an IRA. So most of the dollars, or most people that have an IRA, it's usually because of the bulk of that coming from a former employer plan. Now, there are other types of IRAs, mm-hmm. too, for example, for self-employed individuals and so forth. You might hear terms like simple IRAs, SEP IRAs, individual 401ks. There are all sorts of
And Joel, I think what I would mention there for our listeners, if they do want to go and learn some more, I mean, certainly you can do an internet search. We do have information on Vanguard.com that talks about the plans in more detail and the eligibility requirements as well.
So the two major ones, though, that you were just mentioning, the traditional and Roth, it might be helpful to sort of explain what are the differences there, or what do we mean when we talk traditional IRA
and Roth IRA?
Yeah, I
think most of us are familiar with the traditional IRA. They've been around since 1977,
eight, somewhere in that range.
You're the geek, so I thought you knew the exact date.
I don't know the exact date. That's why I said about 40 years earlier.
Okay. So with a traditional IRA, typically the contributions are tax deductible, meaning that you can take a tax deduction in the year of contribution. The account grows tax deferred. Then later, when you're in retirement and you make withdrawals, the entire pre-tax balance is subject to income taxation. They are also subject to required minimum distributions, mandated withdrawals annually beginning at age 70 and a half.
Basically, the government doesn't want you to continue deferring taxes indefinitely.
Correct.
And
yes.
So
yeah.
They force you to take out some of those mm-hmm. dollars from that
right.
tax
so,
advantage.
But the benefit of that is that it grows tax deferred through those savings years, absolutely.
So how does that differ from a Roth IRA?
So a Roth IRA, on the other hand, contributions are made with dollars that have already been taxed, meaning after-tax contributions. One doesn't take a tax deduction when they make contributions. The account grows tax-free, and there are no lifetime mandated withdrawals.
So you don't have to take money out because, I mean, you're not accelerating or you're not having additional tax that's being deferred, if you will, from that Roth in the same way that it was from the traditional.
Right. And those are, they're relatively, it's the younger sister, I guess, of the traditional IRA. It was... they came about in 1998, so this year is?
This year is the 20th anniversary.
Ding, ding, ding.
And I bet you didn't know that there's a celebrity in your presence today.
Tell me more.
So, I happen to be, or at least I'm claiming to be, the world's first Roth IRA investor.
That's the geek.
20 years ago.
How does this come about?
So back in 1997, there was actually fairly significant tax legislation, part of which established this new thing called a Roth IRA, named after a senator from Delaware, that would begin in January of 1998, hence 20-year anniversary here in 2018. Well, I was kind of working on tax issues at the time, and I kind of thought this Roth IRA idea was pretty cool for reasons that we'll talk about. And I decided that I wanted to be like the first day I was going to invest. And at the time, Vanguard had an investment center here in our corporate headquarters where you could walk in and do a transaction on your account. And so, as I recall, the center opened at, I forget if it was 8 a.m. or 8:30 a.m., but in any case, I was in line before the doors opened, and I was the only person in line. And I walk in as soon as the doors open, go to the counter, I'm like, I need to make a transfer from my one account here because I'm funding a new Roth IRA. And I've got the transaction confirmation, and so I am claiming since, I have the transaction confirmation time stamped at something like whatever 6 minutes after the investment center opened, that I was the world's first Roth IRA investor.
Okay, so what you're really saying, Joel, is that you were Vanguard's first Roth IRA contributor.
Well, at least I'm claiming that. I can't actually document it in any way, shape, or form, but I'm claiming it. So You know, I've been a Roth IRA contributor and investor for all 20 years.
Well, I converted my traditional IRA to a Roth in 1998. We'll talk more about that. But we'll talk about that more. So I just had to go head to head with you on this one a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just want to go back to, we talked about traditional versus Roth.
Yes.
Right. There's also, I want to go back to the traditional IRA, right? Because Roths were created in 1990 or introduced in 1998. Prior to that, and even currently, you can still contribute to a traditional IRA as long as you have earned income.
Yes.
It's just a question of whether or not the contribution is deductible.
So what you're saying, so yeah, and this is an important point for the listeners. Some traditional, we had talked about traditional IRAs being sort of a tax deduction coming with it. But what you're saying is that that's kind of sometimes a tax deduction comes with.
Right. So as long as you have earned income, you can contribute to a traditional IRA. The question is whether or not the contributions may be deductible. There are income phase outs. And again, you can go to the web to learn more for our listeners.
Well, and not just income phase outs with the traditional IRA, but also whether you participate in an employer-sponsored plan.
Oh, correct. Yes, that's a good one. Good clarification.
Because if you don't participate in an employer-sponsored plan, then there are no income limits, and any traditional IRA contribution
may be taxed. Well, it's not if you participate. It's whether or not you're eligible to participate, if you want to really be technically accurate.
Yeah, that's correct.
So, no, that's a really good point. So oftentimes the question is whether or not I should make the contribution to a traditional IRA or the Roth IRA.
Basically, which one to choose.
Right.
And how do you make that choice? And that's where, that's the question that you always get, right? You know, hey, so I hear about traditional IRA, Roth IRA, how do I make the choice? I think a lot of times the knee-jerk reaction that people have when faced with that choice is, well, you're telling me with one I get a tax savings now, and with the other I don't. Therefore, I'll choose the, in this case, traditional IRA, or, I can contribute to my 401k.
Right, it's that immediate gratification of that tax deduction.
Right.
Not really thinking through, wait a minute, what's my situation look like today? And then I get, tax-free growth as opposed to tax-deferred growth. And, by the way, I don't have to take distributions.
Well, this is where I think in many ways it's helpful, just a real quick example. I mean, the IRA contribution, the annual contribution amount that you are allowed today is $5,500 if you're under age 50. So if you think about this choice of a traditional Roth IRA, I'm going to make the math a little bit easy and just say that you have a 50% tax rate. We can argue about how relevant that is, but it's just to make this point. So $5,500 contribution. In a traditional IRA, I get the full benefit of that $5,500 going into the account because in essence, it's pre-tax dollars. Mm-hmm. Let's say that investment doubles over time while it's in there, so it goes to $11,000, but as you had mentioned earlier, you have to pay the tax when you take the money out. And let's just say you take the money out at one point in time, that $11,000 is fully taxable. If it's still that you have a 50% tax rate, it's worth $5,500 to you at the end of that period. Now let's take the case of the Roth. So you make a $5,500 contribution, but it's after-tax dollars that you can contribute. So if that $5,500 is your income, if half of it's taxed, you're only contributing $2,750 into that Roth IRA. It doubles over time, just like the previous one. And that is, it's in the same investment within that IRA. So it's at $5,500, but assuming you meet the conditions of not having the account taxed at the end, you still have $5,500. So the point being, in either case, you have $5,500. Mm-hmm. So there's, if the tax rates don't change, you have, the same expected amount from the traditional and the Roth down the road. So, and that's where I think sometimes people get a little bit confused is, I get the tax deduction now. Yeah, but it's on the back end. You get the offset in terms of the Roth. And that's why this rule of thumb tends to be out there. And when I'm making the choice between a traditional and a Roth IRA, the rule of thumb is, do you think your tax rate is going to be higher or lower than it is today? If you think it's going to be lower, maybe the traditional IRA looks more favorable. If you think it's going to be potentially higher, then the Roth IRA might look more favorable. Do you know what your tax rate's going to be in the future?
I can't predict it. It may have a sense, but you can't predict it, right? You don't know for certain. Or you don't know what the federal tax landscape can look like.
Yeah, or your
own, your point.
Yeah, your own personal situation, right. What the tax rates might be. In many ways, it's akin to this idea of why do you diversify an investment portfolio? I don't know if U.S. stocks are going to perform better than non-U.S. stocks or bonds or cash or so forth. And instead, you try to invest in many different asset classes or many different investments to diversify that risk that you don't know what's going to be the best performing approach. I think there's a similar story here. You know, this concept of tax diversification when you're thinking about the IRA. So in many ways, the right answer may not be one or the other, but in fact, both, because by investing in both or contributing to both or having both over time, you know, you can help mitigate that risk that, well, I don't know what my tax rate's going to be in the future.
So so when we get asked the question, which, the answer is yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The answer is yes. Exactly.
Joel, I honestly get a lot of questions around, well, you know, how can I be sure that the Roth IRA isn't going to get taxed down the road? So there's this uneasiness sometimes that still exists out there with investors around the concern of the tax treatment of Roth IRAs changing. And my response often to that is, well, there's no guarantee that there may not be changes to traditional IRAs, for instance, as well.
Right.
Right. So we make our decisions based upon what we know today.
To the best of our ability today.
Right. And I think that's where tax diversification really lends itself nicely to this in terms of holding different account types, because they're taxed differently along the way and also when you make withdrawals as well.
Yeah. And in fact, I mean, there have been a number of different rules applied to IRAs over time. I mean, many years ago, there was actually an excise tax on traditional IRA withdrawals if they were over a certain amount.
I remember that, yes.
That doesn't apply today, but you know, there have been other proposals of, you know, maximum amounts that could be ultimately contributed or in the balances of these accounts. Yep. We don't know what the tax situation will look like or the rules and so forth. We kind of have to just plan based on how we do today.
So let's talk a little bit around maybe as you go through as an investor life stages to think through traditional versus Roth. So let's talk about young investors briefly.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's an easy one or a relatively easier one where I think the cards are stacked towards the Roth IRA in these situations because young investors are presumably in a lower tax bracket. So the benefit of the tax-free growth far outweighs, you know, a small tax deduction that they would get today.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, another way of saying that is that, you know, many people starting out in their careers may be in a very low tax bracket. 15% or something,
right.
You know, and so the tax deduction that you're getting may be fairly minimal relative to the tax you're foregoing in the future when you were to take that money out.
Right.
Yeah, you know, there's a much higher chance that your tax rate is probably higher in the future if you have a low tax rate now.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that the research team here at Vanguard looks at is investment choices. With IRAs. And one of the things we're seeing is actually investors are actually practicing this. What we've seen is that for investors under the age of 49, out of every $10 that goes into IRAs goes to a Roth. So that's pretty enriching.
I'm sorry, what was that? How many? How much?
90%. So 90%. Right. Nine out of every $10.
That are contributed.
Correct.
Yeah. No, But I think this gets to this distinction, Maria, that we were talking about earlier between contributing versus the amount of assets in IRAs that may come from rollovers from other retirement plans.
Right. So when you look at the assets, when you look at industry assets, for instance, yes, you're going to see much higher balances in dollar terms with traditional IRAs than you would see in Roth.
But the flow, as you said, is going more and more in terms of annual contributions towards Roth.
Oh, right, yes.
Accounts.
We're seeing this at the industry level. We're also seeing it at Vanguard. Two out of every $3 that are contributed are going towards Roth.
Right, yeah. So, people certainly seem to look at it as a potential and additional option to their savings
plan. Right, what's also interesting is that we're also seeing that Roth IRAs owners are more likely to contribute to their IRAs. So that's a neat fun fact as well.
Yeah, so it's sort of savings on top of savings, mm-hmm. if you will.
Yeah. And then, you know, before we move off of young investors, the other thing that I like to talk about with Roth IRAs, and sometimes I get smacked with that wet noodle by my readers with blogs and things like that, is, you know, the ability to access Roth contribution dollars. So there's this neat liquidity feature with the Roth IRAs that we don't have with traditional IRAs, and that's the ability to tap contributions tax and penalty free.
Right, which is actually a difference between the traditional IRA and the Roth IRA.
And it can be a very attractive difference in
right.
terms of flexibility. Now,
how
I'm
so?
Not advocating that investors should go out and tap their, you know, contributed dollars. But the flexibility is there that if you're thinking about, particularly with a young investor who has limited resources in terms of how to allocate their dollars, and they may be making decisions in terms of saving for retirement and maybe an emergency reserve, well, contributing to a Roth IRA, knowing that you can tap those monies if you need to, can be, you know, a...
Yeah, I think it's just important to highlight exactly this, which is that when you make a withdrawal from a Roth IRA, regardless of how old you are or so forth, those first dollars coming out are any contributions that you made. You've already paid tax on those because those were after
right,
tax
contributions.
Right,
so you're not going to get double taxed on that, right?
Right, so if you've contributed over the years $10,000, kind of that first $10,000 that you take out of the Roth, there's no additional tax liability mm-hmm. due to that.
Right. You know, I guess I practice some of what I preach.
Yeah.
I had converted the small IRA I had in 1998. We were able back then to spread out the tax liability over 4 years. So it was a nice little perk for those who are interested in converting. So I actually did contribute... I had contributed to my traditional IRA, converted to a Roth, and then later I actually pulled some of those dollars tax and penalty free when I purchased my home.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
So I tapped that. I went through, the financials and things like that, but for me, I felt a prudent choice because it gave me a little bit of liquidity that I desired at that time.
So,
but I was still saving amply, though, within my 401k and my Roth IRA at the time.
Right. Now, the rules on a conversion are a little bit different because now you have to, before you can take that money out with additional taxes that might occur, it has to be 5 years.
Yeah. So, Joel, this is, we've used the word conversion twice so far in this podcast. I think we need to define what a conversion is.
Let's be clear. You've used that term twice. What is a conversion?
Well, I'm trying to move us along. So a conversion is literally taking a distribution from your traditional IRA and transferring the proceeds to a Roth IRA.
Okay.
So there's two ways that you can, as an investor, access a Roth IRA. You can contribute outright or convert from your traditional IRA to your Roth IRA. However, it triggers a taxable event. So those proceeds from the traditional IRA are subject to income taxes.
So it triggers a taxable event, but now going forward, then every additional dollar, once it's in the Roth IRA, assuming, again, you meet the conditions for it being withdrawn tax-free in the future, every additional dollar now would not be taxed, whereas every additional dollar of return, if it were left in the traditional IRA, would be taxed because it's taxed at income tax.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right?
Yes. You know, and this is a tough one because literally it flies in the face of, you know, a lot of the financial planning principles in terms of defer income tax as long as possible. Here, you're actually making a decision to accelerate an income tax liability, but you're doing that to gain a future economic benefit of free growth.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important point because that's where we have been told, it's sort of been thrown into us, don't pay taxes until you have to. Don't pay taxes mm-hmm. until you have to. We already talked about the contribution decision and how that might be affected. But it's in many ways, it's the exact same analysis or very similar analysis about should I do a conversion or not. And there might be reasons to do it for tax diversification like we talked about, or even just sort of multi-year sort of tax planning because at the end of the day, you want more after-tax return or after-tax wealth, all else equal. So that's something, that's a discussion that I try to have with my mom all the time because, she has a fairly amount retired, fairly, decent size traditional IRA and probably more proceeds than she's going to spend in her lifetime out of it. And I've tried to convince her that a conversion might be to Roth IRA might be a good idea, because honestly, neither me nor my brother wants a traditional IRA to be passed to us after she passes away, because you then start having to take it out. You know, just like these required distribution, minimum distributions, there are those after the IRA owner passes away. And that tax rate of her kids is actually higher than what her tax rate is today. And so we've been trying to convince her with the sort of excess proceeds to say, why don't you do a conversion? Pay the taxes, because it's actually better off.
How's that going?
It hasn't been going well. It's like, wait,
surprise.
Why should I pay the taxes? Especially because she's not the one deriving the benefit.
Yeah, and I think there's two wrinkles in that story. One is, you're assuming you're going to outlive your mother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not a guarantee. You're
and
right.
And second, that she's not going to change her beneficiaries.
Yeah, well.
All right, let's also talk about, you know, another reason why a conversion can come into play. And that is for high-income earners who can't contribute outright to a Roth IRA. So as we've mentioned earlier, there are income phase outs on eligibility for Roth IRA contributions. So for high income earners, one way they can go about doing essentially a Roth contribution would be to do a two-step process. First, make a contribution to a traditional IRA. It wouldn't be tax deductible because the income phase outs have already been exceeded, and then later
if they're eligible in an employer sponsored plan, yes,
and later they can convert to a Roth IRA. So it's I call it a contribute and convert strategy as a way to make a Roth contribution.
So people often will refer to this as a backdoor Roth,
correct, right,
contribution,
right. So that's another financial planning strategy for individuals who are looking for tax diversification. And they may, have too much income to be able to contribute outright.
But yet they still want to take advantage of the features of a Roth if they can,
right. Mm-hmm.
Or a tax-advantaged mm-hmm. account.
Yeah, and I think then the other strategy would be for individuals who have large amounts of dollars in tax-deferred monies, and they want that tax diversification. They may, over a series of years, do partial conversions where they can, over a scheduled period of time, for instance, diversify their portfolio and equalize that balance a bit between traditional and Roth.
Yeah, there are a lot of different conversion strategies. I mean, we can start talking about, you know, ways to manage. You talked about the required minimum distributions from IRAs, traditional IRAs, right?
Yeah.
You know, and by doing some conversions, you may actually be able to lower your total tax liability over your lifetime by converting early and paying some tax and avoid potentially additional taxes from the required minimum distributions bumping you up into different tax brackets once you have to start at age 70 and a half taking those distributions. But I wanted to get back to this backdoor
sure.
sort of process. So are there any additional complications, though, for doing this backdoor? It sounded really easy the way you were doing it.
Oh, yeah, no, that's an important point, Joel, in that it works very cleanly if you don't have other IRAs that you're not converting. But many individuals do. They might have rollovers and have large deferred balances, and they may not be doing those conversions. The thing you want to think about if you're approaching a backdoor Roth would be what the IRS calls the aggregation rules. So when you do a conversion, even though you're not converting all of your IRAs, for the purposes of calculating the conversion taxes due, you need to aggregate all of your IRA balances. So even though you might want to convert a small piece or just a contributed amount, you have to look at your across IRAs and aggregate those for the purposes of calculating the tax liability. The IRS is not letting you cherry pick what you can convert, essentially.
So an example here might be if I'm contributing $5,000 for a traditional IRA, non-deductible, that is, it's taxable money because I'm over the income limits, which is this case of the backdoor contributions. I'm contributing $5,000, but I already have $5,000 in a traditional IRA that's its pre-tax money, let's say, if it will roll over from a prior employer. I now have $10,000 total, but I just want to convert this $5,000 after tax into the Roth. I can't just convert the $5,000 and say there's no tax effect on that, because it would look at my total IRA balance of $10,000 and say half of that is taxable, half of that is not taxable. So whatever amount I convert, whether it's $1, $5,000, or the entire $10,000, half of that conversion amount is taxable. So I'd have an additional tax liability. Right.
So you just want to be careful if you have other IRAs you're not converting. But it's a good point, and it's one to, you know, if you're thinking about it, just stop, think about your tax situation. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't necessarily do it. You just need to think about the overall tax consequences of doing so.
So, Maria, we've been talking about a lot of different conversion sort of strategies, whether it's backdoor, this contribute and convert, you know, maybe in retirement there might be conversion approaches. Are there other times? I mean, other times that conversions might make some sense?
Yeah, I actually do want to go back to that, because I think we talked about, you know, the more the relatively easier situation with young investors. But as, you know, for those folks that are nearing retirement, the decision often becomes, well, you know, how should I direct my contributions, right? And I think there is really think about the tax diversification opportunities if you can. But then once you're retired, to gain that tax diversification, the only thing you really can do is do partial conversions, for instance, convert those traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs. And actually, it could be a very good financial planning strategy, because for some individuals, you know, particularly if they retire early, they may be in a relatively lower tax bracket between the ages of 60 and 70.
Well, and also they may now have a little bit more certainty once they've stopped working, or they have that earned income no longer coming in, of what their future taxes might look like relative to their current taxes.
Correct. Because of, you know, what their income looks like, but then also predicting what RMDs could look like.
Right.
Because that's the big one, is when you think about investors today with large deferred balances, once they reach age 70 and a half, it's a good thing they've accumulated, you know, large balances, but the IRS starts mandating these distributions. So those dollars will be taxed, and that coupled with potentially individuals that defer Social Security until age 70, there could be a pretty unwelcome tax bite come age 70. And there your options are relatively limited. So one strategy can be to actually accelerate those withdrawals through Roth conversions, for instance, gaining that tax diversification, lowering your tax deferred balances, and then the subsequent RMDs off those balances.
Because the RMDs are only out of that traditional IRA, and you've taken that down over time.
Right, exactly. So the key there then is to use those years as planning opportunities to accelerate some income, presumably at a lower marginal bracket, to help equalize those IRA balances. We're actually seeing evidence of this with our IRA shareholders. I'm calling this the Roth conversion zone. We're actually seeing Roth conversions increase between age 60 and 70, doubling at age 70. Now, granted, the numbers are still really low across the board, but we are seeing a peak come up at age 70, and that leads us to think that investors are starting to understand the benefit of the tax diversification during those years.
And there's some other elements, too, of not just the RMDs, but to the extent that you have less taxable income because it comes in the form of a Roth IRA withdrawal, you know, things like your Social Security taxes, Medicare premiums, and other items that are related to how much taxable income you have may be more beneficial as well.
So, you know, my message is for individuals who are thinking through this or might be interested, I mean, this is really where the number crunching comes into play. Working with a financial advisor can really be beneficial, because there may be some opportunities for you know, for instance, maybe if an individual is charitably inclined as well, right? So balancing some of these, you know, strategies where you accelerate income, where there may be some charitable offsets or things like that too. So some things to think about.
Yeah, I mean, there are any number of reasons why from year to year, a tax situation for an investor in retirement may be higher or lower. And having both types of accounts, now you can sort of strategically withdraw to sort of optimize that tax situation.
Yeah. So my point here is, like, should everyone go out and do a Roth conversion? No. But should everyone consider it? Absolutely. If tax diversification isn't there, think through it. At least if it's something to rule out. If not, then think about this tax diversification and how best to balance that out.
Yeah, a lot of that information is out on Vanguard.com. Maria, you've written a number of blogs on this topic, and others with respect to IRAs. Maria, as you know, we have a colleague in the industry that likes to talk about this topic in much the same way that we find ourselves talking about it at times. Financial planner, a fee-only financial planner by the name of Alan Roth, who talks a lot about IRAs and Roths and conversions.
And it would only be appropriate that we had a discussion with Roth on Roth.
There we go. So, he was here at Vanguard just a while back, and luckily we were able to sit down with him and probably hear some similar themes that what we've been talking about. But it's good to in many ways to hear it in multiple perspectives, because there are a lot of issues involved with IRAs, and getting people to think about the relevant pieces of their own financial plan or situation to help make this decision, I think, is very helpful, in hearing that from Alan as well.
All right, let's hear what Alan has to say.
So, Alan, we've been sort of talking a little bit about Roths, your namesake type of financial investment. Was the Roth IRA named after you?
No, I came from the Rothschild family.
Oh, nice.
No relation, obviously. But yeah, the Roth IRA is a brother-sister product to the traditional IRA. And in the traditional, you get the tax deduction when you contribute, and then you pay taxes after it grows. The Roth is just the opposite. You don't get the deduction now, but if Congress doesn't change laws, then it can grow, and when you take it out, you never have to pay taxes on it.
Congress never changes laws,
do they?
Of
course not.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't predict markets or politics.
Well, how do you think about the use and this choice of whether traditional or Roth IRA or 401k from that standpoint, for those that have that option as well?
Yeah. You know, whether it's a 401k or IRA, they can either have traditional, they can have Roth, and my answer absolutely is yes, meaning that you need both, because it's a form of political diversification. We never know what tax laws will be. We never know what our tax bracket will be upon retirement, et cetera. So it's a way of getting some diversification, just like owning broad index funds and bonds and different asset classes.
Yeah, that's the real point, right? I mean, in many ways, tax rates are a risky, uncertain outcome, just like investment returns of the future,
yeah.
Right?
And so much of investing is admitting that we don't know the future, and our instincts usually fail us.
Alan, I want to get your thoughts. So Joel and I talk a lot about Roths, not surprisingly. But one of the unique features with Roths is that you can access the contributions. And I had blogged about this recently, and I got smacked with a wet noodle by some of my readers around this in terms of the flexibility that a Roth IRA affords an investor. Would appreciate your thoughts on that, if you agree, disagree, in terms of using a Roth as a multitasking type or an off-label type account.
Yeah, I think that it's true. You can tap the Roth before you're 59 and a half. It gives you more flexibility in that you don't have to start tapping it at 70 and a half with the required minimum distribution. But with that said, tapping a Roth is really the last money that I tell clients that they should spend. It's their most valuable money. It will never be taxed again. It can grow tax-free.
Yeah, I think we got into this debate about whether you could use it as, for example, as you're trying to accumulate when you're young as an emergency spending account, from the standpoint of, as opposed to you think about somebody that may save 10% of their income, and hey, we say get this emergency reserve together, and that may you should have 6 to 12 months of an emergency reserve. Well, that's 50 to 100% of your income. If you're doing that 10% a year, it takes you 5 years before you're even investing long term. Yes, how do you think about some of that?
You know, first of all, whether you should have 6, 9, 12 months, if you work for the federal government, if you're a tenured professor at a school, university, you may not need that much. If you're working with a startup company, you probably need an emergency reserve. So, you know, typically, especially when someone's young, their tax bracket is typically lower. So Roths are pretty attractive because they're not getting as big of a deduction. Using it as an emergency reserve, you know, if mom, dad won't lend you any money, if otherwise you're going to be living under a bridge, that would be the reason I would tap it. Otherwise, I would try to leave it alone.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to have an emergency reserve just because Maria just will say something, and yeah, I could get fired for what I might come out of my mouth.
Yes, that's so. Your concern about being fired is that I will say something.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's all your fault.
And the rumor that I'm paying her to say that to get you fired is false.
No, Alan, I agree with you. I mean, I think it does. It comes up primarily with young investors who are constrained in terms of saving for retirement, then also liquidity concerns. So, I usually will bring up the Roth IRA as one. Roth versus traditional, for the reasons that you mentioned, Roth is probably a better vehicle. And oh, by the way, you can tap that in the event that you need it, but it certainly is a retirement account first and foremost.
Yes. I mean, as a last resort, tap it.
Actually, you know, though, I think people have gotten this fairly right. I mean, we actually see it data here at Vanguard. 85% of contributions to IRAs made by millennials are made to Roths.
That's cool. I didn't know that. That's wonderful news.
And it's about two-thirds overall of all clients. Now, traditional IRAs just tend to be larger in terms of assets because it's still the typical mm-hmm. rollover vehicle as people leave plans and so forth. But the adoption of Roth has actually been fairly significant.
Yeah, I have more money in my traditional than I do Roths because traditionals have been around a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah, no doubt. One thing that we talk about a lot, too, is using, and you talked about the political diversification during, like, the contribution pieces of this, but, you know, also, like, smoothing out or diversifying the tax liabilities as you're getting to retirement or trying to deal with multi-year tax planning issues, RMDs, and so forth. Can you talk about a little bit about how you think about using Roths to help, you know, as we kind of get near that retirement phase?
Yeah, I mean, typically a Roth is more valuable money than a traditional because a traditional is really a joint partnership. The account holder owns a piece of it and the federal and state government owns a piece of it because taxes are going to have to be paid. So your contribution to your Roth is more valuable than the traditional.
For the same dollar contribution,
right,
for example, you would make. Yeah.
And then, you know, I almost always recommend delaying Social Security to age 70. And, you know, the RMDs don't begin till 70 and a half. So there are some great opportunities if you retire before 70 years old to start moving money, doing multiple Roth conversions at a lower rate, which lowers your RMD and gets more money in that diversified, more valuable tax wrapper.
Yeah, you had mentioned Social Security and delaying Social Security. What's the reason for delaying Social Security that you often see?
Well, according to the work that I've done, when you could, there's only one inflation-adjusted immediate annuity that you can buy right now. I think it's principal. And the work that I've done shows that delaying Social Security is like buying a deferred inflation-adjusted annuity at about a 45% discount on what you can buy in the open market. So what I tell people at age 62, we can add in what they would have gotten to their safe spend rate because and they can withdraw it from their portfolio because what they're really doing is buying that deferred annuity, inflation-adjusted annuity, because, you know, 7 years later, 8 years later, you're going to be getting a whole lot more and, you know, increasing with inflation. What could be better than that? Longevity risk, you decrease with that.
Yeah, when we talk about doing the distributions from the Roth to maybe fill that gap, but there's also, you know, all sorts of things of converting from traditional to Roth, which is an option that can also be done to help with smoothing out these tax bills or other freeing up other contributions to tax advantage accounts, right?
During those years between retirement and taking RMD and Social Security, there are lots of different options. Another option is you can recognize a long-term capital gain at a 0% tax rate. By the way, I've always argued investing is simple. I never argued taxes were.
Yeah, taxes are extremely complicated at times, aren't they?
They are.
It gives lots of opportunity at the same time. Yeah. I just want to clarify something that, you know, as we go through this, because, you know, we love to sort of think about what the current rules are and so forth, and you talk about, you know, we never know what might happen in the future, and you're right, Congress could change these things. And even under the current regime, though, there's still some risk you have to be careful about Roths could be taxed, right? I mean, it's not like they're never taxed or never would be taxed.
We could do something like a consumption tax, which would be the like the Fair Tax Act, where you are taxed when you spend it. So if you converted to a Roth or contributed to a Roth, you're paying taxes twice. So it absolutely can backfire, which, again, I don't believe solely in Roth. I don't believe solely in traditional. I don't believe solely in taxable. I believe in different pots of money.
Yeah.
I get that question a lot in terms of concerns around Roth or Roth conversions, in that, well, there's no guarantee that these monies might not be treated differently down the road. But there's no guarantee that traditional IRAs may not be taxed differently as well, too. Yeah. So we know the tax regime that we have in place today, and much to your point, is investing in different account types will give us tax diversification for the future.
Yeah, I mean, this may seem far-fetched, but politics often is. The government could say, my gosh, we've got a big deficit. We've got a large amount of debt. We're suddenly going to make everyone's traditional have to pay taxes out of that, and they'll be converted to after-tax type of things and no longer on the Roth. So anything can happen.
Let's just hope you don't end up in the legislature there, Alan, with that proposal. I just wanted to clarify, too, because, you know, even under the current tax rules, I mean, if you don't hold that Roth IRA for 5 years, or take it out, the earnings, for example, before 59 and a half, there may be tax and potentially penalty due.
Yeah, unless special hardships. And,
right.
And I mean, I hate to say it, but everything I'm saying, there's exceptions
exactly.
to the exceptions. Seek a competent tax advice, blah, blah, blah.
There's the episode title for this one. Seek competent tax advice, blah, blah, blah,
blah. Blah.
You don't like my, I've always said investing is simple, never said taxes were.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. So that's actually quite a bit of information, I think, that we've thrown out. I mean, I know it's, in some ways, it's second nature to you and me in thinking about this, because in some ways this is your favorite topic, isn't it?
Well, I think, yes, we can go down that path pretty quickly, both of us, in terms of talking about Roth and traditional. But
it's one of my favorites, too.
I know, it's one of mine, too, and it's one of Alan's, and I think he touched upon a lot of salient points. Okay, our one key takeaway...
Go for it.
Tax diversification.
Yeah, and what does that mean at the end of the day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Holding both.
It's not a question of either or in many ways, right? It's
right.
How do you think about maybe both, whether it's IRAs or their companion approaches, because oftentimes investors can do traditional or Roth 401k investment in their employer
right.
plan.
Right, so it's
same general
you know,
idea.
I think the consensus was, yes, it makes sense to tax diversify. The question is, how do you do that as an investor? And I think we had some good conversation around that. I would also encourage our listeners, if they do want to learn more, to visit, you know, I think we have a lot of really good stuff on our website, both in terms of information as well as research and blogs and webcasts on the topic.
I agree. And you've written a number of things that folks can find fairly easily on our
And the
on
comments also, when you think about blogs, the comments
are great.
Are great. And I really learn a lot from my readers as well. It also gives us suggestions of things to talk about and further address.
Well, thank you again to those that are listening for listening to our Planner and the Geek podcast on investing. And please join us the next time as we talk about further topics of interest for individual investors.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Planner and the Geek. Just a reminder that you can find more episodes of The Planner and the Geek on iTunes and on Vanguard.com.
Or simply subscribe to our series and you won't miss an episode. And please don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Your ratings will make it easier for others to find us when they're looking for investing podcasts. Please join us next time for another episode of The Planner and the Geek.
Alan Roth is not affiliated with Vanguard, and Mr. Roth's opinions may not necessarily represent those of Vanguard. Diversification does not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. All investing is subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. We recommend that you consult a tax or financial advisor about your individual situation. Copyright 2018, The Vanguard Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved.